Yeah, well, before we become the WWE podcast, the other news, Sam Aldrice.
Yes.
Look, he at least gets to resign with a 100% winning record.
Yeah, there is that, I guess.
Look, he's gone. We can debate whether or not he's done anything particularly wrong or why he's probably the merits of why England have fired him so quickly when they possibly could have given him more of a chance for everything to come through and played their cards very close to their chest going, look, we will see all the evidence first before we... But instead, they went up to him and they spoke to him and they kind of went, look, it's not going to work. And yeah. I get the feeling, look, the FA clearly really didn't want Sam Aldrice to be their manager.
I think that
I always felt like England should have given him a chance because I think he did want offer something quite different to every other manager available, and that man management side is definitely was one of his strengths. So it's a pity, I think, for England that he has to go. But let's face it, I feel like at this time next year he was somehow always going to resign or be fired and be replaced with Arsene Wenger.
That is always that was probably a possibility that it was he was the stopgap until Arsene was happy to take up the spot.
Well, Arsene his contract ends.
Yeah.
And he did mention that he considered becoming England manager.
Yeah.
So there is that. And look, they haven't announced anyone new. Gareth Southgate is going to take over in a temporary capacity. Southgate has done really well with the under 21s. So I imagine he will do very well with England, but if he doesn't want to take the job, if he doesn't want to take the job permanently, which maybe he doesn't, he's still quite young and he might see himself more as an age group manager. And if he maybe doesn't want all that stress of being England manager, he's not Kevin Keegan, for example, who's actually managed a club like Newcastle and been under that pressure. Under 21's doing well and all that. He's not under the same level of spotlight as being a club coach in a Premier League club or England coach.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a different level of things.
Absolutely. I think he's very much so going to stay temporary. And like I said, I don't think he necessarily wants the England coaching job at this point of his career.
Exactly. I think you're right. He'd be looking at taking the under-21s, doing something, molding them up, and then looking at to push into...
Well, I think England really, really need a coach who is going to change everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody who will go, look, what can we change, and should we consider changing it? What can't we change, and how can we work around it? There'll be certain things they can't change. They can't change the Premiership being the Premiership.
No.
And things like this. But there's certain things they can change about their youth structure and how they get in. Maybe even work out new rules around benefiting, giving tax breaks to clubs who introduce more local bred football players and maybe give them more tax breaks if their football players are available, are players who can play for England.
Yeah, I think that might be it because, I mean, the clubs already get reasonable, homegrown talent doesn't, talent doesn't count against all the other rules and stuff. The unfortunate thing there is the wonderful loophole about what homegrown talent actually means. So
I don't know if that rule would be kosher under EU law, but Britain's not part of the EU at some point.
That's a good point. It may actually start to have a benefit for English football, at the very least, where they could go...
Or, heck, it doesn't have to be English football, because they could do the same thing for Scottish players in the Scottish football, Welsh players in Welsh football, and Northern Irish players...
We call it British football.
Yeah, absolutely. And say that they have to be available for one of the home nation teams.
And then you get an additional discount. At the moment, it's homegrown talent, so clubs have a benefit of supplying homegrown talent or young talent and that they get those players don't count against any limits of anything or anything, so they can do what they like with them just about.
Yep.
And now it's just adding an extra one of you'll actually get an additional benefit if that young talent can also play for England or for a home nation.
And basically go and heck, they might even get to the point where they go, you have to pay more taxes for players who in your wage bill up to a certain point if they're if it's paid to players who are not able to
play for England. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what how you would do it. How would you get the most? Because there's always going to be people work around the rules. So you have to obviously get the most rules lawyery person to work out the rules, and then go, let him sit there and figure out how you break it. Okay, Jurgen Klinsmann is one person that they're thinking of as a coach, but he seems very happy in America and doesn't want to move. I don't think they could steal Joachim Löw from Germany. Joachim Löw is a good coach, but he has actually worked with. He's basically built on what Klinsmann has built. I'm sure Joachim could build it himself, but Germany and England are very different places with very different structures. So it's hoping for a like for like there is not necessarily realistic.
No, exactly.
So, I think England players, there's obviously people like your Eddie Howes and your Sam Ducks and all of them, I'm sure. Yeah. But I think they're still too young, too inexperienced.
Yeah.
I think they really do need to look at how they're making their coaches in lower level and how they're coaching teams in lower levels in clubs so that these players, even if they don't end up playing for the top premiership teams, they can still they provide the right kind of opposition for good players who end up playing in the premiership.
I know what you mean. Yes,
and so that is something that I think you need. Maybe they will need a director of football type person at the FA. Whose main prerogative is not necessarily just managing the England team, but doing everything else. So it's almost to a point where England go, yes, we would like England to do well in World Cups and qualify. Are we? Is this the main job? No, it is maybe 40% of his job.
Yeah.
And that's something I think Arsene Wenger could do. I think Arsene Wenger could go like, yep, I look after England a little bit. This group of players are going to do. And then I am creating this team of England stars that are going to be awesome in 5-6 years time. And heck, I might not be coached then even. But it's not my main role to lead England to a World Cup victory yet. It is my role to make England develop teams so that we are Spain 10 years from now.
It's his role. It's not his role to win. To take a team to a World Cup victory. It's his role to create the conditions where that team could exist.
We always knew that that team could exist in Spain.
Yeah.
It was something about their weird luck in tournaments that meant that they couldn't come out, and they eventually just had the right group of players and the right coach
at the right time.
At the right time in Euro 2008, and once they won, they just kept winning.
Yeah, exactly.
And are still
one of the strongest teams. Basically,
and they're still one of the greatest teams. And France did it by making sure they could get everyone in their youth structure and get them in. And Germany did the same thing. But England already do that. There's no barriers, cultural barriers to get playing football in England. You're good enough. You can play.
Yeah, exactly.
Regardless of your background. So that part is done. So England, while having those advantages over France and Germany, still couldn't beat them. Which is worrying.
Yeah, it is worrying.
So there's clearly some way. The issue is not like culture. It is around coaching and coaching culture.
Yeah, coaching and a bit of structure. I think it's always again here. It's how you take that young talent and feed it through the system so that you get the team you want at the end.
Yeah.
And whilst it's not the same, there could be a parallel between that and the All Blacks. That's what the All Blacks have done since 2007, basically, is that the outcome of the 2007 World Cup and the horror that was the New Zealand Rugby Union realising they needed to change how things worked. And there's lots of talk on Talkback Radio things about how it's currently the NPC and stuff is no fun, nobody really watches it, nobody cares, because the All Blacks have destroyed provincial rugby in New Zealand, is the general topic. Because NZRU went, the All Blacks is what matter, and winning the World Cup is what matters. And they geared everything into that outcome. So that is, everything feeds to the All Blacks winning the World Cup. And that has meant the All Blacks are by far and away the best team in the world. Nobody else really even comes close. And definitely not on a consistent level. And it's fed to the 32-man team. So the All Blacks squad of 32 is probably the 32 best players in the world, almost. And definitely the top 50.
They're not necessarily the 32 best players in the world, but all of those 32 are at least the top 4 in their position in the world.
Yes, I mean, so you get into the top 50. 32 of those 32 players are all within the top 50 of the world.
Yep.
And that means that no matter what 15 go on the park, and they don't even speak, it's not the 15, it's the 23 that are sitting, that are in this, in the changing sheds before the match and at halftime and at the end. They all know, and they all know exactly their role when they go up there. They know what, and each one has a different role.
But once again, like, that's easy to do in New Zealand.
Yes.
Where rugby is the only game that people play. Realistically, and it's like the most likely game. If you're any sort of good sports person, you will want to pick up rugby if you want to go to a sporting career, because that's going to be the most lucrative, most likely.
In New Zealand, yeah.
And then there's, let's not forget, the All Blacks are not just another rugby team to New Zealand. And they're not just our national rugby team, like the way the Three Lions are to England. Yeah. They are the All Blacks. They're New Zealand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the greater point, though, was that it took the 2007 World Cup was a horrendous thing. And before that, rugby in New Zealand was still the same, but there was a little, it was change where everything, you know, provincial sides of the provincial thing, Super Rugby sort of did the Super Rugby thing, and they sort of fed to each other, and then the All Blacks there sort of picked the best ones, and it was a rugby thing. And it wasn't until after 2007 when they actually rethought everything, and that's what you're talking about, is the next coach or director of football for England to sit down and go, what is the actual outcome we're looking for? And it's to, you know, make it to the final of the World Cup, make it to the semi-finals of the World Cup, or of a major international trophy, and then work back from there. And that's what the All Blacks did. They went, we want to win the World Cup at home in 2011 and work back from there. And what needs to happen to get there? And how does that funnel into that? So that's the same thing as what England's do. They need to set their focal point. This is what needs to happen. What are the steps to get there? How does that work? And unlike the All Blacks, where they'll be targeting a specific, could be targeting a specific World Cup, they might say, we need to get to a final of the World Cup, and then work out what is needed to get there, and then they can work out what the timeline for that is based on there, and what needs to change to shorten that timeline down to the, you know, what major structural changes.
I don't know how you do it. I mean, no. It might be an impossible job to do it in England. England might, that 1966 might be a one-off in history. We don't know. I don't believe that. By the way, I think England have plenty of World Cups. As long as we could play football, there's always a chance that England can win a World Cup. But I always feel like the way their structure is now, if it does not change, it'll always be because the other contenders didn't play well enough. Not because England were the clear best team like in 1966. Does that seem like a fair or statement? Or like not too harsh?
It is a little harsh. It's just that, but I know where you're coming from, and that it does seem a bit at the moment like England have a good, always go into tournaments or into years with a good team on paper.
Yeah,
like they have, you know, look at them, you know, they're awesome, they play well, thing, and then they will play well as a team, and it's not really like a Brazil of pre-1950s sort of thing where they're a team of stars that didn't play well together. They're a team that stars that do play well together. England nowadays.
Yep.
They just,
England, well, let's face it, the Brazil, before they won a World Cup, or before the national disaster in 1950, were notorious, because they were the original Spain. They kept choking in major tournaments. They had a dreadful record in not just World Cups, but also Copa Libertadores. And so they knew they had a lot to work on, and they went big. They changed their uniform.
Yeah.
And they went a completely different way to how everything went, how their football philosophy was. So England may have to do something similar. I mean, people think that that's just a symbolic change, but these symbolic changes work. Leeds famously changed their uniform to all white to match Real Madrid because they wanted to have that same winning mentality.
Yeah.
And they became one of the most successful team in the 70s.
Yeah.
I don't think that is by itself enough, but something like that, while doing all these other changes,
it's one of those things that it allows you to, if you have a meaning for it,
yeah,
it allows you to focus on that meaning.
Yeah.
So it gives something else there. As an aside, and this reminds me of a story I heard recently at a thing I was at for work. It was about a football team. It was a Brazilian football team. I can't remember the name of the club, but it was a pretty famous club. And they had a famous strip that was black and red horizontal stripes. And they showed up one day, and all the red had gone out of the uniforms, just black and white hoops. And apparently that caused this big uproar. And they pointed out, the reasoning for it was that there wasn't enough blood donations happening in Brazil. And so they made a stand and said, you know, we're doing this because we need to have it. And then they filled up the red, as more and more people donated blood in Brazil, they filled up the red bands again. So you got this filling meter of how much blood was being donated, which was really interesting. And it was the same thing, or like Leeds changing their uniform, or Brazil changing the uniform, doing it for a reason in that it allows visual focal point for that change. Mm-hmm. So whatever you're doing, we're doing this, and this is what we want to be like.
I mean,
and therefore we change this very visual bit of it to show that we are breaking from the old way, and this is now a new way.
What is it that England's actually missing? Are they missing good players? No.
No.
Are they missing good facilities? Absolutely not. Probably the best facilities in the world.
Yeah.
Are they missing a strong league with competition? No. They're probably, their players play against probably some of the best players in the world. Every week in and out.
Okay.
The only thing I can think of why they don't do as well in tournaments, one, obviously the media.
Yeah.
So, like, I've been reading, which is quite interesting, that the 66 World Cup actually took a while to kind of enter the public consciousness. People weren't that into it.
Yeah.
They didn't bother with having a mascot till like 2 months before. And like a lot of their marketing and all of this stuff didn't happen till before. Like the England team players would just go out on the streets, go shopping, and people didn't pay them mind. So there was not that same level of pressure on that 66 team as was on current day footballers. Like, yes, there was a lot of pressure on them before the final.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe before the semi-final. Absolutely. But at that point, they were already there.
Yeah. That, and they were already in the winning mode.
Yeah. So therefore, it's the last time England played that well was in 1990 and 1990, Euro 1996, where 1990, the England teams were coming off a 5-year ban in Europe in playing in that tournament. I don't think too many people gave them that much of a hope and were not overconfident. And boom, they played well, went to the semis. And 1996, where England didn't even qualify for the 94 World Cup and nobody was giving them a chance. Yes, they were hosting it at home, but it was a tournament people were excited about, but not in that they were thinking England were going to do really well. They were just like, oh, look, England will be there. To a certain extent, England sports fans in the 90s had very low expectations of their sports teams. Their cricket team were not doing well. Their football team seemed to not do that well.
Yeah.
And so then the England team did really well in Euro 96. And then the Premiership picked up. And then obviously by that point, 98 and 2000, way different levels of expectation. All that implies. And look, we can choking big games is fine. And to an extent, because you're making it to those big games. Just have to be like, look, Spain kept choking. We'll eventually be Spain. Because that was their thing. But if you're not making it to those big games, you're playing poorly in group games and just kind of fizzling out of tournaments, that's not what you want from England.
No, exactly.
The only thing, and so that, I think the media pressure does help, and clearly the players are tired.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the tank. I feel like the best England teams are teams haven't played a lot of club football. They pick one or two, and they still have right now, I don't think you could pick a lot of players outside of your top six teams. And those top six teams play a lot of games.
Yeah, they do. I think you're right. It's one of those things that definitely over the last few tournaments, and I think the last three or four major tournaments that England have been in, is that they seem to go out and don't quite have the zip they should have. And other teams tend to raise up against England because it's England, and they're like, oh yeah, we're going to...
Well,
even nowadays, there's a bit of, oh, it's England, we have to beat them to show that we're good.
There's a bit of that. And look, the 20-team league, La Liga has a 20-team league, but I think in La Liga, outside of your top three, the other teams, while very strong, most of those players are in those top three teams.
Yeah.
And they play well enough in their other games and then kind of like bring up their good, you know, they're able to peak at the right times and then peak again and come tournament time. And Germany, they have an 18-team structure, small, and they have a winter break, much same as La Liga. And it's not necessarily maybe the number of games, it's the fact that they don't get enough rest periods. Yeah. That could be.
The major tournaments are generally the end of a long season as well. It adds extra length to the season. I think it's probably true. It's just a bit of... It doesn't seem to be physical fatigue. It's definitely mental fatigue.
Yep.
Is it? And it's just like England just don't have it to...
would one of the potential solutions be something like going in a tournament year, you have an extra team relegated the year before, so you have a shorter season?
Be interesting, yeah.
I mean, it would never happen, by the way. This would never work.
I know, I mean, it's how to get it right, and I mean, yeah. It's
like, you play an 18-team season every two, like, but that's thing, you're alternating. You're playing an 18-team season, then a 20-team season.
18-20.
And you have, like, a bigger parachute. Maybe you permanently play an 18-team tournament. But I think the thing is, the Premiership is a perfect football product.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no reason to change the Premiership for a Premiership fan. No. And, like, I'm definitely putting on my an England hat here. And I'm not even an England fan here. I'm just thinking, how would you do it? Because as a Premiership fan, if you took two teams away, I would be frothing at the mouth going, dare you do this just for the England team?
Exactly.
The Premiership doesn't have any loyalty to the English FA or the English. Like, it would be nice if England won a World Cup, but they don't care.
Maybe the other option is in tournament years to start slightly earlier. So start at the end of July. Just to give that, and maybe just I know it means, but you're still playing that same number of games, maybe just congest up a little bit here and there a little bit so that you end.
You're already giving players less holiday than they have.
Yeah, but what I mean is that you end the season another month earlier, so that leading up to the tournament, they've got more of a break. So they've got the down. The problem there is there's two ways. Either you have less going during the year, or you have a better cool down period before the period. It's to allow their brains to switch off, give them a chance to sort of unwind from the season and then go again for the tournament, so that the tournament's almost like the start of the next season as opposed to the end of that season, of the previous season.
That is a way to do it, potentially. I don't know. It's one of those problems which I don't think has a single solution. No. It's definitely not one you can solve in a podcast.
No, exactly.
We can only postulate. Heck, maybe there's absolutely nothing wrong with English football and the right coach coming along will just change everything.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? We'll find out.
But on that note, I think that will be all. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We'll catch you next time.
See you next time.